Hey guys, and welcome to Mysteries and Histories with me, your host, Georgia Marie. This podcast audio is adapted from my YouTube channel. I wanted to make my content more accessible for those of you on the go, and we all love a podcast. So if I ever reference anything on screen or a photograph, please bear in mind this audio was originally made for video. It won't hinder your listening experience at all, but just to save any confusion. And if you do want to go and subscribe to my channel, I'm just Georgia Marie over on YouTube. And with that, let's get into it. Hey guys, I'm Georgia and welcome back. Or if you're new here, welcome. On my platforms, I try my hardest to spread the word of missing and unidentified people, as well as share the story of unsolved cases in the hope that maybe one day the right person might hear the right information and things might get solved. Today I want to share with you the story of Jake Latchley, who disappeared from Baton Rouge, Louisiana in August 2014. The circumstances around Jake's disappearance are truly baffling, and whilst the police have written his case off as a suicide despite the very limited evidence pointing in that direction, his mum Tina has been on a mission to get actual answers, as Jake's case has been brushed under the carpet since day one. I've actually been working really closely with Tina in writing the script for this video. She's helped me get all the facts straight here, so a huge, huge thank you to her. And also, I just want to say that she is just the epitome of a mother's love, almost 8 years on from her son's disappearance, and she is still fighting tooth and nail for justice and answers in Jake's case. It is truly incredible to me how hard she is pushing for answers after getting pushed back time and time again. And as you'll come to see, this isn't a very simple case. There are so many unanswered questions. But if we do spread the word about Jake's story as far as we can, hopefully someone somewhere out there will be able to provide some vital information. Maybe someone in Baton Rouge saw something that night that they didn't think anything of at the time, but is actually a very important detail in this case. Just a quick side note before I get on with the rest of the episode, you can probably tell from my voice and my general appearance that yes, I am sick once again. I've had so many colds. I think this is like my third or fourth cold, plus COVID, since May of this year. I just feel like being in isolation and not really socialising with the general public for the better part of 2 years has really done a job on my immune system. So yes, I am constantly ill at the moment. I'm aware. I had somebody really sweet, like really, really concerned in my last video when I said I was sick. They were like, you've been ill so much, are you okay? I'm really worried about you. I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. They're just colds, but yeah, sorry, please do excuse the fact I am a bit croaky in this and I probably look very red and crusty, but I have got my trusty Lemsip to try and beat it away. Also, stating the obvious for YouTube viewers, I have a new background. I think I mentioned not too long ago that I'm making some big changes on my channel. This is the next part of it. I wanted to just create a cozy sort of viewing experience. And yeah, I'm really happy with this. I've got my little plant. It's not finished yet. I'm going to get like some other stuff to like fill out the background. But I'm just testing it out today, so please let me know what you think. Anyway, Jake Allen Latchley was 22 years old when he went missing on the 29th of August 2014. He was a white male, 5'10" and 150 pounds. He had brown hair and brown eyes with a cross-shaped scar on his left wrist. He may have had a short moustache and beard at the time of his disappearance, and he did smoke cigarettes. He also had a broken foot at the time, so he was using crutches and wore an orthopaedic boot. This will become a very important detail in Jake's story, but we'll come back around to that in a little bit. I asked Tina to tell me about who Jake was. I mean, it's always so important to remember that the subjects of these videos are people, like real people with likes and dislikes, their quirks, and loved ones missing them. Tina said that Jake was always a very quiet boy. He loved to fish and he loved to work on cars, and he was the type of person who had to sort of learn everything about everything. It really made me smile as Tina was telling me about that aspect of Jake's personality, because I am also the kind of person who has to know everything about everything. I mean, that's pretty much what my entire YouTube channel is dedicated to, finding out information, education, sharing it. Jake was so dedicated to his quest and knowledge that when he was a teenager, he took apart and remade a whole car in his mum's garage, something that most people can't even dream of being able to do, but Jake taught himself and he did it. When he was 2 or 3 years old, he was actually diagnosed with lymphoma, which he did overcome, but it did make him a very strong person, and that reverberated through the rest of his life. As an adult, Jake was incredibly hardworking, and he worked 3 jobs actually, mostly with the aim of being able to support his young daughter, who he had with an ex. According to Tina, Jake was actually attempting to get custody of his daughter at the time of his disappearance. He'd already found a place for them to live and he was working really hard with his jobs, and there was supposed to be a court date in a couple of weeks. He'd even had a loan approved for a business. He had all of his ducks in a row to take his daughter on full time, and he was doing right by her. He also believed at the time of his disappearance that he had another child, but after everything happened, it was found that Jake wasn't actually the father. All of which does make what happened next even stranger, because Jake was clearly a very responsible guy. He was determined to look after his child and ensure that nothing bad happened to her. Tina also says that Jake was always the clown. He was always very upbeat and happy, and at least as far as she was aware, he had no mental health issues, nor did he take any drugs. It was very early in the morning of the 29th of August 2014 when East Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office received two anonymous phone calls saying that somebody had jumped over the railing of the Horace Wilkinson Bridge. This was a bridge carrying Interstate 10 in Louisiana across the Mississippi River from Port Allen in West Baton Rouge to Baton Rouge in East Baton Rouge. It's worth noting this bridge is always busy, no matter the time of night or the time of day. There's literally always cars on this bridge, people driving down one of the six lanes at the very least. The two calls that came into the sheriff's office were strange. The first one was very casually reporting somebody on the railing of this bridge. The caller was speaking very casually, like they were talking to a friend. The second call was different. The tone and intonation was almost the complete opposite of the first. However, both calls came from the same phone number. According to Tina, it was as if the person was trying to pretend to be two different people. On one call, they reported they were driving eastbound, and the other, they said they were driving westbound, even though there's no way they could have turned around so quickly. Apart from this anonymous person, there's no other witnesses as to what actually happened on the bridge that night. There was one truck that was spotted in the far right-hand lane, the lane that you needed to be in to get off to go to West Baton Rouge. Again, this was a very busy lane, and the truck being in this lane would have caused some issues for other drivers. Despite this, and the fact that lighting on the bridge is poor, nobody hit the truck. When officers arrived at this truck, it was found that the engine was still running and a phone and cigarettes remained inside. It would later transpire that not long before the two anonymous calls, a state trooper had said that he'd called in to report the truck on the bridge. This state trooper was driving eastbound and said that he saw a grey car with the truck at this time. This piece of information in regards to the grey car would never be followed up on. As you may have gathered by this point, the truck on the bridge that night belonged to Jake Lachelet, and he has never been seen since then. For investigators with the East Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office, this case was open and shut. It was very clear to them that Jake had parked up on the side of the bridge, jumped off, and committed suicide. But Tina isn't convinced. She says that it wasn't in her son's nature to do something like this. Of course, a lot of people say this when it comes to their loved ones committing suicide. There's always a bit of denial. But there are so many more reasons as to why Tina refuses to accept this as truth. And I do very much agree with her. There's so many reasons to believe that Jake didn't commit suicide here. At the very, very least, more investigation needs to be done in this case because, quite simply, there just never was one. There never was an investigation. For one, Jake's body has never been found. Investigators said they searched the river, but if they did, it certainly wasn't an extensive search. And then after that, the case was closed. Nobody has ever turned up in the last 8 years. This was classed as suicide, and that was that. In fact, in a statement, investigators said that Jake was just another simple missing person. Perhaps if investigators had ever made a visit to Jake's home, a trailer he shared with a roommate, they might have had more questions. They said they never had jurisdiction to search his home, but when Tina turned up, she found that his home, his trailer, had been completely destroyed. Clearly something violent had gone on because a window was punched out and there were holes in the walls. Jake's TV and game console had been stolen, as well as his guns. Pretty much anything of value that belonged to Jake was stolen. His roommate, however, said he never heard anything at all and slept through all the commotion. He said when he went to sleep, the trailer was normal. When he woke up, it looked like this. The roommate also says that he didn't see Jake on the 29th. And then at some point, not long after Jake's disappearance, Jake's trailer burned down. Tina says that she still doesn't have a solid answer as to when this happened, as there's no burn report of this incident. She was simply told that a nearby truck had caught fire, igniting the trailer. And it's up to you whether you believe this or not, but it does mean that if there was any evidence to be found in Jake's home, it's now long gone. From day one in this case, Tina has had to do most of the investigating by herself, as she was completely brushed off by the police. There was one detective who seemed to be on this case from very early on. This detective went on Crime Stoppers to talk about it, but when Tina was eventually able to get an interview with him, he told her that it wasn't his case and said they needed more information to be able to reopen it. He also said the case was not under his jurisdiction. And the jurisdiction in this one is really tricky, as the marker between West Baton Rouge and East Baton Rouge sits directly in the middle of the Horace Wilkerson Bridge, and there's been this ongoing fight over jurisdiction on the bridge for decades. Both offices, West Baton Rouge and East Baton Rouge, are always trying to push the crimes onto each other. It was East Baton Rouge who took this case on first, it was them who went to tell Jake's dad about his death, and it was them who went on to Crime Stoppers. However, since then, they've been trying to push it off onto West Baton Rouge instead. So one day, Tina goes to West Baton Rouge and spoke to a detective there for 3 hours, showing them the facts of this case, and she was brushed off once again. It was also this jurisdiction argument as to why they said they couldn't go and search Jake's trailer. I actually last spoke to Tina just last week, who has now said that West Baton Rouge police are once again saying it's not their case and have referred her back to East Baton Rouge. So everything is very much still in the air. There's nobody actually on this case. At this time, she has no idea who's handling Jake's case or if anyone is at all. So, okay, perhaps nothing I've said to you as of yet convinces you of the fact that this wasn't a suicide. Maybe the investigators were shitty, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're wrong. Except there's one very important piece of this puzzle that I haven't yet shared with you, in that Jake actually had a broken right foot and a broken thumb at the time of his disappearance. Jake could only walk with crutches at this point, and he was also wearing an orthopedic boot that he was only supposed to take off to shower and to get dressed. He physically could not walk without these two items. Tina did find Jake's boot in his bedroom, but the crutches were nowhere to be found. So let's say that Jake did jump over the bridge that night into the river down below. Whilst his body likely would have sunk, although it probably later would have turned up on the riverbed somewhere, the crutches would have floated. They would have washed up fairly quickly or have been spotted by somebody on the surface of the water. That should have been sign number one that something was up with this case, that it wasn't all straightforward, because if the crutches weren't found in his truck or leaning against the railing of the bridge, the only possible answer at this time could have been that they went over the bridge with him. Again, he could not walk without the crutches, his foot was in a very bad way. Which also raises questions as to this method of suicide anyway. He would have had to have climbed over the wet metal railings at night with a broken foot. It's certainly not impossible, but it would have been incredibly painful for him, and it would have taken him a very long time to climb over the railing. Enough time, potentially, that other passing motorists must have seen him do it. Adding the broken thumb as well into this equation, it would have been quite a feat for him to get over the railing. I find myself asking why, if Jake wanted to commit suicide, he chose this particular method instead of potentially using one of his own guns that he kept at home. I know suicidal people aren't always thinking clearly in these situations, and that may well have been the case here, but it does seem like a lot of obstacles to overcome when he had easy methods he could have used. 5 years after Jake's disappearance, Jake's aunt would actually text Tina telling her that for all this time, Jake's crutches had been in her shed. The aunt said that Jake had told her that the doctor had released him, so he didn't need the crutches anymore, and so he left them there. It's strange, first of all, that she would wait 5 years to report this back to Tina, who had been focusing on the crutches as a main point in the investigation since day one, but also that Jake would have said that he no longer needed the crutches, as he was actually waiting for surgery to fix his foot at this time. There was no way that his doctor would have told him that he didn't need them anymore, and at this point, Tina actually provided investigators with Jake's doctor's details so they could check this for themselves, but of course, the investigators never followed up. Investigators have always been so uninterested in this investigation that, as I said, Tina has always been the main investigator since day one. She told me about how, after losing her job, she actually went back to school for private investigating, and she uses what she learned there every single day to get justice for her son. People in the area now know that if they have any new information in Jake's case, then they need to send it to Tina instead of to law enforcement because they're just not interested. Tina's actually teamed up with a company called OSINT, Open Source Intelligence, who are specialised in cases like this one, and they work solely off of facts. They've provided me with the following statement. We perform OSINT passive reconnaissance to collect intelligence in the disappearance of Jake Latchley. We provide all intelligence collected to the respective law enforcement agencies/agencies for the purpose of allowing them to pursue the appropriate course of action. The most notable aspect of Jake's cases, given the prodigious volumes of intelligence we gathered over a 5-year period, and given the innumerable law enforcement agencies in receipt of the volumes of this intelligence, we are dumbfounded by the law enforcement officials' unwillingness to actively pursue the appropriate course of actions to resolve Jake's case, thereby bringing justice to the persons who were involved in his disappearance and consequently Jake's murder. In Tina's mission to get answers, she actually focused in on the anonymous phone calls made to the police on the night of Jake's disappearance. She told me that at first the investigator she spoke to lied to her and said that the first phone call had come from a local payphone, saying that somebody was falling over the bridge. But she soon realised there's not a single payphone in close proximity to this bridge. They then said it was a truck driver who witnessed the fall, who then called another truck driver, and it was the second driver who called it in. Again, this likely wasn't true. Investigators told Tina that the phone calls couldn't be traced. However, she was able to get the recordings from 911 and quite easily found the number that made the call, confirming that it was indeed the same person who made both phone calls reporting Jake on the bridge. Tina called this number herself, but the person on the other end denied knowing what she was talking about. And whilst we're talking about phones, let's focus in on Jake's own phone records from the day before he disappeared. Investigators consider that Jake disappeared slash died on the 29th, but Namus actually changed the last official date of contact from the 29th to the 28th, as no one who knew him actually saw him on the 29th, or at least as far as anyone has admitted. The last text message on his phone came in at around 11 p.m, and the last phone call he made was to a random number, a number that wasn't saved under a contact in his phone, which is very strange in itself. It must have been a number that he memorised or at least had noted down somewhere, but he didn't deem important enough to save in his phone. Or perhaps it was somebody who had contacted him previously, but again, he didn't deem it important enough to save. Or it was a number, like I said, that he had saved or written down elsewhere. If Jake was in distress, as police insist he must have been if he was about to commit suicide, why would this random number be the one he calls? Or could whatever this call have been the thing to push him over the edge? Tina insists if Jake was in trouble, he would have called either herself or his brother, who he was also very close to. He did usually come to them if he had any issues or needed advice, so it's odd that he wouldn't in this situation. On the day of the 28th, Jake and his ex-girlfriend, with whom he had his daughter, got into an argument which prompted Jake to say he didn't want anything to do with her anymore, his ex. If you recall back to the beginning of the video, Jake was in the process of trying to get custody of his daughter. That same day, he got a text from his boss asking him to work, but he turned it down, which is unusual in itself. And he also received a text from his ex asking to meet at Walmart, and it's unclear if he ever actually went there to meet her or not. Tina has seen transcripts of his text that day and say that after a certain point, the tone of the text messages sent by Jake changed, as he no longer believed it was him sending them. Of course, I don't have transcripts or the text myself, and nor did I know Jake to tell if the messages would have been him or not, but Tina has said there was definitely something strange going on. If Jake did indeed meet his ex at Walmart that day, that would mean that she would have been one of the last people to see him. However, she was never called in by investigators to make a statement. Multiple other people have made statements of their own volition, though, in which they've given different accounts of the X's movements that day. Of course, I can't name the X, and I'm not accusing anyone of anything, but considering she could have been the last person to see Jake and attest to his mental state, it's very interesting that she was never spoken to by investigators. As if this case wasn't already convoluted and complicated enough, I've barely scratched the surface of so many weird things that have happened since Jake's disappearance. Over the COVID pandemic, people across the USA received stimulus checks from the government, and Tina discovered that stimulus checks were being received in Jake's name, mailed to an address in a small town in Mississippi. By this point, Jake had been missing for over 5 years, and the address just so happened to belong to Jake's ex-girlfriend's grandparents. Seeing as investigators did declare Jake's death a suicide, you would assume that he would have been declared dead on any official systems that he would have needed to be, but it seems that his social security number is still being used to claim money on his behalf. I did ask Tina if she knows if Jake's been declared as dead legally and how this works in terms of stimulus checks still being sent out in his name, but she said she has no more understanding than I do of why this seems to have slipped through the cracks. Obviously, being from the UK myself, I don't know how all the bureaucracy surrounding stuff like this works, and Google yielded little helpful information, so if anybody would be able to provide any further answers as to how this can be allowed to happen, please leave a comment below for me and for Tina. Tina has, of course, given this information to the IRS, the federal government's Internal Revenue Service, and to the police, but no one has ever followed up on this. This just seems to be allowed to happen. And through her investigation, she has also found the identity theft of 7 other people, all leading back to this small town in Mississippi. Apparently they had credit card numbers, pins, passwords and more. It just seems like it's rubbing salt in the wound. This is all hard enough without the added complication of identity theft of an allegedly dead man on top of it. So many people, friends and family who knew Jake in real life, refused to believe that he would have jumped off the bridge that night. Although it was definitely his truck parked in that far lane, there's no evidence to suggest that he actually jumped over the bridge, or that if he did it of his own volition. It's very strange that no body has ever been found at any point down the river. It's strange how unwilling law enforcement seems to be to actually look into this case properly. Regardless of what you personally believe in this case, it doesn't sit right with me that they would be so quick to write Jake's disappearance off as a suicide based on 2 phone calls which turned out to be from the same person and just a parked truck, without ever going to visit his home or talk to his mother or even talk to his ex-girlfriend. Jake's case needs to be reopened and it needs to be looked at properly. At this point in this case, all there is to do is just to spread the word, say Jake's name, to pressure people into possibly coming forward with more information. If you live in Baton Rouge or anywhere nearby in Louisiana, then please do share this video or just share this story with the people around you. There has to be more to this case. Even if Jake did commit suicide, there wasn't any investigation to lead them up to that point. How do they know that that's what he did? There's never been anybody found. As I said at the beginning of this video, my heart absolutely breaks for Tina. She has been doing everything she can do since the day her son disappeared, and she is determined that one day she's going to get answers, and believe me, she is not going to stop until she does. Thank you so much for tuning in today, and I will see you in the next one. Bye guys.